into, he cut it apart. Anyone he ran into, he fought them. If they ran, he cut them down like they weren't worth his time anymore. And the Nye, at his bidding, killed even more. The village of Harrenfell had lost almost... Their stories were the same. Anything the black-eyed swordsman ran into, he cut it apart. Anyone he ran into, he fought them. If they ran, he cut them down like they weren't worth his time anymore. And the Nye, at his bidding, killed even more. The village of Harrenfell had lost almost 8 out of 10 of its residents. Most of the survivors were children or the very old, those that, to hear Kai tell it, the Incarnation had considered unworthy of his attention. Only 3 men had faced it with swords in hand and survived. They all agreed on one thing. The Incarnation was headed southeast. "Toward Cana," Indiriel said. He had taken the other Valenhal travelers to his own tent, which was much larger than the others and set with tables and chairs. "If I know anything about Valen," the Overlord went on, "he'll make a beeline for the capital. And if I know anything about Valenhal, he'll cut through the king's guards and challenge Zacharyth himself to a duel." "Will that matter?" Denner asked. "We know how well protected the king is. Even against an incarnation, couldn't he hold his own?" Kai spoke up softly, but he kept his gaze on the face of his doll. "Against the incarnation of any other territory, yes," Kai said. Denner sighed. "That's not the whole story," Indiriel said. "It gets worse." He turned to face Simon. "Doesn't it?" Simon stared the Overlord in the face. How had he known? Did Damasca have their own spies in Enosh? "Indiriel has his own sources of information," Angeline told him. "Don't worry too much about it." "The Grandmasters know the Incarnation is loose," Simon said reluctantly. "They're planning to attack." Kai and Denner both turned to stare at Simon. Indiriel nodded, as though one of his suspicions had been confirmed.
"You have risen far, it seems, little mouse," Kai said.
Simon shrugged, trying not to let his discomfort show.
"Alan insisted I go to the meeting," he said.
"And I, for one, am glad he did," Indiriel responded, "because we can use this information against the Grandmasters, before they destroy everything we've worked to protect."
"Just a minute," Denner said. "We've established how Simon knew what the Grandmasters were planning. But how did you know he knew?"
Indiriel smiled. "Trade secret," he said. "Now, if I may have your attention." The Overlord spread a map out on his table, pointing. "We are here, just to the southeast of Harrenfell. Well, what used to be Harrenfell. If the Incarnation had continued in a straight line toward Cana, he would have reached the village of Belcor, which is only a few miles south of our position. But, as far as we can tell, Belcor still stands." Indiriel nodded to Simon. "What does that mean, Simon?" Simon hurriedly scanned the map. Presumably, the white tent-shaped piece on the center of the board represented their location. Harrenfell was a small labeled dot to the northwest, Belcor another small dot to the south. If the Incarnation was headed straight to Cana, there was no way around. Simon cleared his throat. "Either he's still here, or he went the long way around the village. Or I guess he could have moved through the village without killing anybody." Indiriel nodded. "Well put. We find it unlikely that he stayed here. Even as a human, Valen didn't like standing still, and I'm sure he's even more restless now. So it's unlikely he stayed here, and even more unlikely that he moved through the village without killing anyone. But we know he wants to get to Cana." Kai waved a dismissive hand.
"He could have passed through another territory. If Enosh found him, we won't see him again until he's tearing down the gates of Cana."
Indiriel hesitated. "Let's say I have reason to believe that's not the case. Even if it is, though, Cana is well defended. But I find it more likely that he will show up somewhere between here and Cana, where the land becomes so populated that he can't sneak through. If we wait here, we'll be close enough to travel as a group and catch him as soon as he appears. We should be ready to move in a day or two."
"Wait here?" Denner said. He sounded oddly hopeful. "Just wait around?" The Overlord chuckled. Sorry, Denner. We need someone to deal with the Grandmasters.
Denner sighed.
Now, Indiriel continued, we know what they want. They're trying to attack a hanging tree wherever they can. Since each Overlord guards one of the trees...
The hanging tree? Simon interrupted. He had heard references to it before, but no one had ever explained what it meant.
It's an artifact of Ragnaros, Denner explained. It keeps the incarnations in check. Each tree seals one incarnation, but they're all connected. The more trees destroyed, the closer all incarnations get to escaping.
Indiriel returned his attention to the map.
We know that the Grandmasters will be attacking the Overlords they see as weakest. We've checked on each Overlord, and we feel confident that it will mean Deborah, Eli, and Malachi. Malachi's wife isn't a traveler, so they'll almost certainly hit that point. I was planning on giving you two, he indicated Kai and Denner, a team, and having you each defend one of these points. But without Catherine to cover the third...
Indiriel paused thoughtfully.
Simon, he began, but Kai cut him off.
No, Kai said firmly.
Do you have access to ghost armor? Indiriel asked Simon, ignoring Kai. Simon glanced between Kai and the Overlord, trying to determine what had passed between them. But he was missing far too much information to make any sense out of the situation.
What? Ghost armor?
Indiriel nodded, digesting the information. How about the frozen horn?
Simon shook his head. Were these Valenhall powers?
The Black Gauntlet?
Sorry, no.
The side of Indiriel's mouth quirked up.
What do you have?
Simon did not consider himself a dramatic person. Big, flashy gestures were for people like Alan. But every once in a while, he felt the situation called for more than a simple answer. He reached out his mind in a mental call, and Azura answered. At the same time, he summoned steel and essence both. In a fraction of a second, he held Azura in his hand, and he spun the sword forward, so that the razor's edge of the blade rested against Indiriel's neck. A flap of fabric from the tent fluttered to the ground, where Azura's blade had neatly sliced through it. Indiriel's lopsided smile didn't vanish. His eyes turned to Kai.
Nigh essence.
Kai shrugged.
Not my doing, he said.
Clearly. Well, Simon, I've got news for you. First, Indiriel was standing over his map, sword at the edge of his neck. Then, suddenly, he wasn't. There came a blur of black motion and a pain in Simon's hand, and he was no longer holding Azura.
You're not the only one, Indiriel said from behind him.
Simon turned around to see Indiriel offering Azura's hilt back. Simon's face flushed, and he took Azura and banished it without a word.
That's what you get for showing off, Angeline said.
You're not helping, Simon said. His embarrassment lent an edge to his mental voice.
No need to snap.
That's good, Simon, Indiriel said. But I can't send you out on your own if you're not prepared to stand against a real traveler. Kai, you protect the Naraka incarnation in Malachi's realm. Denner, I'll send you to protect the Asphodel incarnation with Eli. You have some experience in Asphodel, don't you?
Denner repressed what might have been a twitch in one eye, and Haruman chuckled. But, eventually, the traveler nodded.
Excellent. So, you'll support Eli, Kai can help Adrienne, and I'll come up with a team for Deborah. She probably needs the least help. Simon, you'll stay here with me. If the two of you don't make it back in time, Simon and I will be the ones to intercept Valen. No one liked that.
Oh, I see. He'll stay with you, Kai said. Under your protection, I'm sure. Pardon me if I don't trust in that.
He's a boy, Indiriel, Denner said. He's not ready for this. Simon didn't say anything, but he didn't relish the idea of spending his time in battle beside a Damascan overlord. Indiriel held up a hand to their objections. Honestly, he'll be safest here. I'll be able to keep an eye on him, and I spoke to the king only moments before I met you. I'll be getting some backup. It should arrive shortly.
If you'll have so much help, Kai said, then you won't need the boy.
Simon was beginning to get a little sick of being called the boy.
"He should learn how the world works, Kai," Indiriel said. "Since you're not going to teach him, someone has to."
Dinner raised a hand, like a child waiting for an adult to call on him.
Excuse me, but I think we brushed past something fairly important.
What kind of backup are you expecting, Indiriel?"
This time it was Indiriel's turn to sigh, and Simon was surprised at how much it made him sound like Denner.
"That's the other thing," he said. "I'm getting a pair of Ragnaros travelers. Maybe some travelers from other territories if they can be spared. But two Ragnaros at least."
"Fascinating," Angeline muttered. "It's been so long."
"What?" Simon asked. "What is going on?"
Kai cocked his head like a bird, though this time he looked more angry than curious.
"Very well, Indiriel. You've obviously thought this through."
"I try," Indiriel said dryly.
"It wouldn't be wise for either of us to fight alongside a royal," Denner agreed. "Too much bad blood. But how about Simon, though? He's killed his share of Damascan soldiers."
Indiriel regarded Simon seriously, and a bit sadly. Involuntarily, Simon took a step back. The guilt returned, sick and heavy in his stomach. Was Indiriel going to try and arrest him? Would Simon have to try and fight his way out?
"The king is aware of Simon's situation," Indiriel said. "He has yet to render judgment. I'll do everything in my power, Kai. You can trust me on that."
Kai stared from behind his white bangs for a long time. Then, to Simon's surprise, he nodded.
"Very well. You have a Naraka traveler prepared for me, I assume?"
"I'll have someone take you there in a moment," Indiriel said. "And Denner, the Asphodel quarters are only a few tents down from here, so I'll take you myself. There's one thing I need to know first. Where's your dragon's fang, Kai?"
He gave the question so much weight that Simon got the impression that there was more to that question than showed on the surface.
"In the Wanderer's hands," Kai responded.
Indiriel nodded slowly, and then he grinned.
"You may not believe me, Kai, but I'm glad to hear it. Maybe this long disaster can have a happy ending after all."
10 minutes later, Kai and Denner were both going en route to their respective realms. Simon leaned back in a chair in Indiriel's unoccupied command tent, deep in conversation with Angeline.
"How did I end up helping Damasca?" Simon asked. "I wasn't aware you had ever sided with Enosh," Angeline responded. "Alan assumed so, because of what happened with the sacrifice and the Overlord."
"I never thought of myself as an ally of Enosh," Simon agreed. "But I sure never sided with Damasca. So what now?"
Angeline was silent for a moment. Simon had noticed that she tended to be a little more thoughtful than his other dolls.
"I wouldn't think of it as fighting with or against Damasca," she said. "You're not, really. What you're doing is opposing a violent and deadly incarnation. After he's taken care of, your part here is done."
Simon wished he believed that.
"Wait a minute," he said. "You're part of Valenhal. Shouldn't you be on the incarnation's side?" The doll didn't move, but Simon somehow got the impression that Angeline shrugged.
"Some of us in the house would see it that way, I'm sure. For myself, though, I find his actions morally reprehensible. He needs to be stopped."
Simon considered that for a few minutes, until the sound of trumpets shattered the night. Instantly, soldiers boiled to life in the camp around him, arming themselves and shouting to one another. He heard them, even saw some of them through gaps in the tent's fabric. A few poked their heads into the command tent, looking for Indiriel. Upon not seeing him there, they immediately ducked back out.
"What's going on, do you think?" Simon asked.
Then he heard the first screams, and one of the Nai entered the tent. The Nai, looking like a man in black clothes and a hooded black cloak, carried an iron chain in between its two gloves. It stopped for a moment when it saw Simon, surprised.
"Well," Simon said, "it's been a while since I've seen one of you."
The Nai stepped forward, and Simon summoned Azura.
The sword was far too long for the cramped confines of the tent, so its point materialized a fraction of an inch from the knife's chest. There was a brief blue-white flare of light within the cloaked figure's hood, and the knife slid to one side, still rushing to get its chain around Simon's throat. But Simon had experienced enough of that for one lifetime, and he had the speed of the Nye on his side. Simon had called steel at the same time he summoned Azura, but now he called essence. His lungs were filled with ice-cold light, and time itself slowed before him. He gripped Azura's black-wrapped hilt in both hands and swung as hard as he could. He sliced the entire tent in half, Nye included. He saw the black robes collapse and squirm together, like a severed earthworm of shadows, cloth, and moonlight. It slithered together and began crawling off into the night. That was all he saw before the tent collapsed on his face. He struggled out from under the heavy canvas, flailing around with Azura in one hand, and with the other hand trying to get a handful of fabric and pull it off him. He had cut through the lines and poles holding the tent up, so the remainder of the fabric had fallen on top of him. It took several minutes before he finally managed to extract himself from the fallen tent.
"Ahem," Angeline said.
Simon whirled around for a moment, trying to figure out what the doll was warning him about. Then he realized he didn't have Angeline. It took him another few minutes of searching through the tent's shredded remains before he located the doll. Her straight blonde hair and black dress were in perfect order, but her serious-looking face managed to express clear disapproval. Cradling Angeline in one hand and carrying Azura in the other, Simon moved forward through the camp. He kept Azura's tip pointed at the sky to avoid slicing open someone else's tent, as he had done to Indiriel's.
"I thought Valin wasn't supposed to wait around here," Simon sent to the doll. "We weren't supposed to fight him for another 2 days." "It seems that Valin decided to change the plan," Angeline said. "Behind you."
Simon spun around. One of the Nye ducked behind his first swing, though he did manage to slice through a rack of spears, sending a handful of spearheads clattering to the ground. Simon levered the sword into an overhand strike, bringing Azura's blade down on the robed servant from above. He sliced off about a foot of fabric from the Nye's head, which apparently passed for a fatal wound, as the man-sized robes collapsed into a pile of shadow and light. The essence faded from Simon's blood, and he didn't bother to hang on. It would regenerate soon, and he would need it if he had to fight Valin himself. For now, he could survive with just the steel. He had defeated the Nye even before he had gained their speed. First, he had to find Indiriel. Soldiers ran here and there, many of them engaged in combat with Nye. But this wasn't some random village full of civilians. Very few of the Damascan troops needed any help fighting a single Nye. As a result, the soldiers maintained an orderly retreat more than a panicked flight. Most of them were running in the same direction, so Simon followed. Maybe they would lead him to Indiriel. Despite the fact that they were armed and trained, the soldiers had been caught unawares, so some of them found themselves overwhelmed. Simon helped these as best he could, but he rarely stopped moving. If Indiriel expected to engage Valin, he should be there. After what felt like most of an hour, but was probably more like 10 minutes, the soldiers led Simon to the edge of camp. It was an open field on a high hill, overlooking the empty remnants of Harrenfell village. There, on that hill, Damasca had engaged Valinhal in pitched battle. Light from the moon and stars turned the scene into a vision from a particularly strange and violent dream. Dozens of Nye ducked, leaped, and slithered their way around attacks, striking back with their chains. Some of them swung weighted chains in huge, deadly arcs, smashing through armor. Others used their chains more nimbly, like ropes or lassos, grabbing weapons out of the soldiers' hands and pulling them to the ground. Still others used the method the Nye favored in the house, sneaking up to their victims and strangling from behind. The Damascan soldiers, for their part, tried their best to form up in orderly ranks. Orders were shouted back and forth across the field, in contrast to the Nye, who fought in almost complete silence. As Simon arrived,
one squad of 15 or 20 men assembled in a circle, every man facing outward, spears and shields at the ready. In the first instant, their spears sent several of the Nye crawling back to Valenhall. Then the Nye noticed. Several melted down to pools of shadow and moonlight, crawling over to rest under and between the soldiers' feet. Simon wasn't sure what the tactic was supposed to accomplish until he saw one man in red and gold fall to the ground, then another. More black robes flooded in between the open gaps in the formation, black chains taking man after man down by the throat. Travelers stood amidst the soldiers, standing out by virtue of their outfits and the forces they were calling. Tartarus travelers stood dressed head to toe in gleaming steel, keys in one hand, blades flashing through the air. Endros travelers sent white lightning bolts blasting at the Nye. Naraka travelers called burning insects out of thin air. The Nye seemed to target the travelers first. Simon caught a glimpse of one set of black robes sneaking a chain around the Endros traveler's throat, yanking him backwards into the shadows behind a tent. But all that paled in comparison to the battle taking place on the top of the hill. Indiriel pulled up the hood of his black cloak, and for a moment he looked as though he had stepped straight out of Simon's childhood memories. Here, at last, was the hero that had once saved Simon's life. He had summoned his chipped and pitted dragon's fang, but he swung with such speed and fury that the sword itself was little more than a blur. He moved like the Nye, in a smooth flow of cloth like a rushing black river. Simon could see moonlight on Indiriel's breath as he called heavily on the Nye essence to keep him moving at impossible speeds. His opponent didn't look like a monster. He wore only a pair of patched and stained pants that looked like they had come off a corpse. His chest, arms, and bald head were bare. Simon didn't think he even wore any shoes. Every inch of his skin was covered by the black chains of Valenhall. They covered his head like hair, twisted over his arm, covered his chest like a loose wrapping of bandages. This man, Valen, swung a sword that was longer than Indiriel's, almost as long as Azura, but he didn't flail with it as Simon himself did, relying on speed and power to do most of the work for him. He whirled in graceful arcs, meeting every one of Indiriel's lightning attacks. Valen didn't seem to be moving as furiously as the Overlord, but he continued to parry Indiriel's strikes, and even launched a substantial offense of his own. Except for those two, the hill was clear. None of the soldiers, none of the travelers, not even any of the Nye, dared to step in the middle of such a fight. They would barely be able to see what was going on, much less interfere. "Eyes in front," Angeline warned, and Simon levered Azura down to skewer a rushing Nye that barely stood as tall as his shoulder. "Angeline, what are the Nye doing here?" Simon asked, waiting around the group of soldiers. Azura's blade was so long that he couldn't fight side by side with them, not unless he wanted to use the sword like a spear and join in one of their formations. But if he could stay apart from the press of men, then he could take care of any Nye that sought him out. And Simon knew the Nye well enough to realize that they would seek him out. They would attack anyone who wasn't helpless.
"They follow whoever carries Mithra."
"Mithra?" Simon asked, cutting down one of the Nye that tried to slip up behind him.
"The Golden Dragon's Fang," Angeline responded. "It's the original sword, the sword of the Wanderer, and the Nye respect its authority."
Simon pondered that as he stepped further away from the soldiers, keeping one eye on Indiriel's fight, and one eye on the group of hostile Nye. Indiriel seemed to be slowing down, and Simon finally realized why. Even if the Overlord could draw on the Nye essence longer than Simon himself could, there was still a limit. Each of Valenhall's powers only lasted for a certain amount of time. He was either trying to keep his use of essence to a minimum, to conserve it, or he was running out.
"What if we take Valen's sword away?" he asked.
"You know better than that," Angeline said. She sounded disapproving.
"That's not how Valenhall works. If you snatched it away from him, he would summon it back. To keep it away from him for good, you would have to earn it."
Simon nodded, absent-mindedly knocking an eye to the ground with Azura's hilt, reversing the blade, and skewering the black-robed figure into the ground. He let Azura vanish, releasing Benson's steel.
"This is not the right time for that, Simon," Angeline said. "Also, behind you."
Simon spun around and barely managed to catch the eldest Nye's sleeves before they wrapped a chain around his neck.
"I was wondering where you were," Simon said, trying not to let the strain show in his voice. "Oh, Maker," he thought. "I forgot how hard it is to fight these things on my own."
With the strength of steel, one of the Nye was nothing. Without it, Simon wondered how he had ever managed to defeat one.
"I go where my leader is," the eldest rasped.
He snapped his arms to the sides, effortlessly breaking Simon's hold. He began to glide circles around Simon, who turned warily to keep him in sight.
"Why?" Simon asked. "What do you get out of this?"
He had used this tactic before, with Malachi, but he found that people tended to enjoy talking about themselves. They enjoyed it so much, in fact, that they were often willing to talk until his powers were restored. The eldest spun his black chain idly, hands, as always, hidden by the enormous sleeves that draped down at the end of his arms.
"I seek the restoration of Valenhal, son of Kalman. I will follow any who joins me on that quest."
He struck out with a chain, quick as a thunderclap. Simon tried to knock it aside with one of his hands, but without the essence in him, he was too slow. He dulled the attack, though it still felt like a hammer slamming into the back of his hand, but the end of the chain still clipped his jaw. The eldest's hood rocked back as though he were surprised.
"You do not use the gift I gave you."
Simon shrugged. "Ran out," he lied. The Nye struck again, low, aiming for Simon's ankle. Simon stepped over the strike, rushing forward to grapple with the eldest. The Nye all looked like men in cloaks, but it was more accurate to say they were bundles of cloth given life. They had barely any weight. If it came to wrestling, he would have the advantage. In theory. The eldest did not seem surprised that Simon had avoided his attack, whipping the chain up and across Simon's back. Simon shouted at the pain, which felt like getting kicked by a rough-shod horse. But he pressed on, wrapping an arm around the eldest and using his other arm to fumble for the Nye's chain.
"Below!" Angeline shouted in the depths of Simon's mind.
The eldest barely moved. He tucked his black slipper behind Simon's ankle and pulled his leg back, sending Simon crashing over backwards. Simon squirmed, gasping for breath. He had forgotten how much fights tended to hurt without steel running through his muscles. The eldest stood over him, chain between his shrouded hands, studying him with a hood full of darkness.
"What is your plan, son of Kalman?" the eldest asked curiously. "You have kept to our bargain. I would not see you die tonight."
Neither steel nor essence had yet recovered to their full potential, so Simon needed time. What would convince the eldest to let him go, and give him enough time to enact the next step in his plan?
"I would hardly call it a plan," Angeline put in.
"Wait," Simon said. "How does following Valen help you? He's not restoring Valenhal. He's not adding anything. He's just destroying."
The eldest's head cocked slightly to the side, in a gesture almost reminiscent of Kai. He didn't say anything, but he didn't kill Simon either. Simon decided to take that as a good sign.
"What happens when he gets his revenge on Damasca?" Simon asked, desperate for something to say.
He struggled up to a sitting position. "He'll be done. He'll have no reason to recruit more Valenhal travelers after that.
What will you do then?"
"We tried to follow another, once," the eldest whispered.
His voice still managed to cut through the sounds of battle coming from Simon's back.
"He betrayed us through inaction. Never a step forward. He remains, to this day, little more than a coward. Tell us, Kai's apprentice,
Who would you have us follow?
How about me? Simon said. He hadn't intended to say that, and he was almost surprised to hear the words come out of his own mouth. Angeline seemed stunned speechless. The eldest shook his head sadly.
You have no chance, son of Kalmon. I am sorry. I like you, but you would have to win Valen's sword, and I simply do not see that in your future.
Simon glanced over to the top of the hill, where Indiriel still fought. His breath no longer glowed, and he seemed desperate to fend off each of Valen's strikes. Watching the fight, Simon was shocked that he hadn't been killed already. His essence had run out.
I don't know if I've ever told you this, Simon said, but I don't believe in prophecy.
On shaky legs, he stood, turning his back to the eldest. It was a risk, but a calculated one. Angeline would warn him if the eldest attacked him while his back was turned, but Simon was mostly counting on the Nye's own curiosity to keep his chain still.
I think I know what you're doing, Angeline said. I don't like it.
I didn't expect you would, Simon said, but he kept walking. Soon he stood only paces away from the battle between the founder of the Dragon Army and one of its first members. Simon was close enough that the sound of their swords was deafening, and the wind from their blows tore hair away from his face. Simon pulled the Nye hood up over his face. Valen! He called, shouting as loud as he could to be heard over the cacophony of battle. Valen turned his head toward the source of the shout. Indiriel kept attacking, but Valen somehow managed to block his student's sword each time, without bothering to use his eyes. His eyes. His terrible eyes. Simon was stunned, almost speechless at the sight. The man from Harrenfell had mumbled over and over about the sight of the Wanderer's black eyes, but he had barely done them justice. The whites of his eyes were solid black, a darkness that stood out from the surrounding night. But even worse were the parts of his eyes that should have been colored. They were a gleaming steel, like the metal of a dragon's fang. Was that what Simon himself would become, if he lost control? Simon shook off that thought and forced himself to keep speaking.
I challenge you, Valen, Simon shouted. Duel me!
He summoned his blade, calling steel into himself. Azura's 7-foot length shimmered in the night as it appeared in his hand, gleaming under the moon. Valen stepped away from Indiriel, who, wisely, Simon thought, sank to one knee, panting. If Simon accomplished nothing else, at least he could give the Overlord a chance to recover his power.
Who are you? Valen asked curiously.
My name is Simon, son of Kalmon. Because he thought it would be appropriate, he added, Traveler of Valenhal. Valen's chain-shrouded face split in a broad grin. I would be happy to test you, Valenhal Traveler. He brought Mithra's golden silver blade up to his forehead, raising it in some kind of salute. Simon raised Azura to his face, mirroring the incarnation.
Try not to die too easily, Valen suggested.
Then he attacked.
Chapter 10 Return to Bel-Kalem. Alan was yanked from a deep, dreamless sleep by the sound of his doors being blasted open.
Time to rise, Eliadel, Grandmaster Naraka announced.
That was some kind of pun, he was sure. The word Eliadel meant, in some ancient language, the rising sun. But it was too early in the morning for him to appreciate the humor. Groggy, Alan rose to a sitting position.
What's happening? An attack? Are we being attacked?
Not quite, boy, the Grandmaster said, pulling the sheets away from him.
He was practically naked beneath, so he squirmed away from her sight.
Oh, don't be a princess, Naraka snapped. You've got nothing I haven't seen before, I promise you that. Hurry up and get your armor on. We need you looking your best if you're going to lead us into battle.
Alan stumbled out of bed and into his clothes, still trying to shake himself awake.
Battle? I thought you said there was no battle.
Clean out your ears. I said we weren't under attack, and we're not. We're the ones doing the attacking.
Naraka grinned, showing several missing teeth. She was wearing her blood-red spectacles, even at this time of the morning.
But the plan, Alan said. He walked over to his armor stand and studied the complex contraptions that were his boots. How was he supposed to wear this armor if he couldn't even figure out how to get the boots on?
Naraka snapped her fingers and pointed to someone on the far side of the open door. Two attendants, a man and a woman, hurried in. They curtsied to Alan and began helping him with the straps and buckles of his golden armor. Alan left them to it. He had no idea what he was doing, so he might as well accept the service of those who did.
We had intended to sketch out a plan later in the day, Grandmaster Naraka said, as her servants worked on Alan's armor. But events, it seemed, have outpaced us. Speaking of which, I have something of a surprise for you.
Naraka waved at the door again. Briefly, Alan wondered if she had the entire city standing outside his chambers, waiting for her to wave them in. And a young man walked in. He was a year or two older than Alan, and he walked like a guilty child, hands in his pockets, eyes on the floor, back slouched. Someone who didn't know him would never suspect that he was one of the most accomplished travelers in the city of Enosh. And Alan had seen him die.
Galad! Alan shouted, genuine joy in his voice.
He tried to step forward, but the servants were still working on his greaves, and they pulled him back down. They even muttered in complaint, politely. Galad shuffled in place and gave Alan a sheepish grin, barely glancing at Alan's face before returning his eyes to the floor.
I thought you were dead, Alan said.
Grandmaster Naraka snorted.
You were the only one who believed that, boy. I admit he had me worried for a while, taking so long to get back. But it turns out he had quite the adventure, didn't you, Galad?
Galad shrugged uncomfortably.
I don't know about that, Grandmaster. I only did what I could to get back home.
After you left Naraka,
the Grandmaster said to Alan, ignoring Galad completely,
Galad single-handedly overpowered the Itossus tribesmen and the squad of travelers Damaska sent hunting him. After being stalked by a pack of deadly predators across the wilderness, he finally infiltrated a Damascan outpost in Naraka, where he waited until their waypoint was unguarded. He managed to distract the guards long enough to open a gate and travel back to our world, straight into the middle of a camp of Damascan soldiers.
But I didn't have a choice, Galad protested. That was the only way out.
Long story short, he's back now, and he's got news less than an hour old. The Incarnation has attacked the Damascans.
What?
Alan said. His voice rose sharply at the end of the word, as one of the armorers gave him a nasty pinch while adjusting his breastplate.
Yes, indeed, Naraka cackled. Overlord Indiriel, a handful of travelers, and almost 1,000 men are trapped outside a village in the middle of Lysander's realm. It looks like the Incarnation decided they were enough of a threat to turn around and engage them directly.
So what's the plan? Alan asked.
We're leaving as soon as you're dressed. We've gathered up everyone we can on short notice, and the others have their assignments. But the three of us have our own mission.
Pardon me, Grandmaster, Galad said, but I've been away for a while. What is our plan, exactly?
Grandmaster Naraka patted Galad fondly on the arm.
Our plan, Galad, is for Eliadel to guide us around Malachi's house. I've never been there before, you see.
Malachi, Alan said, startled. He's dead.
I should hope so, considering all the credit we gave you for it, Naraka responded. Regardless, we're not after the overlords themselves. We're after their trees. Malachi's wife is in charge, and she is not a traveler. So her tree is practically undefended. We'll come through Naraka and hit them hard and fast. They'll have some defenses on both sides. But don't forget, our objective is the tree.
I don't know where this tree is, Alan protested. I broke in through the door and fought him in his throne room.
The Grandmaster waved that away.
It won't matter. The tree will be as low in the house as they can get it. In the basement, most likely, or at least in a safe room on the ground floor. If we have to, we'll burn the whole place to the ground, and hope that takes care of the tree.
Alan raised both arms as the attendants continued working on his armor. He barely paid any attention to their work, losing himself in thought. It seemed like they had precious little to go on, but he wasn't the strategy expert here. He had to trust that the Grandmasters knew what they were doing. Something did occur to him, though.
"What if we succeed, and the incarnation gets loose?" Alan asked.
"Then we open a gate out of there as fast as we can and hope it doesn't follow us," Grandmaster Naraka said. "I'm too old to fight an incarnation, and you two are too green. But even if it takes my life, I would count it a cheap price to bring Damaska to his knees."
Alan wasn't sure he agreed, and he didn't relish the idea of losing his life to a monstrosity from Naraka.
"Do you think that's likely?"
Grandmaster Naraka spread her hands.
"Who knows? No one has seen an incarnation for 300 years. But the truth is, I think we'll have plenty of time to burn the tree and get out of there."
Also, Galad put in, "there's very little chance that the incarnation will actually follow us into Naraka. From everything I've read, incarnations become trapped if they enter their own territories." That was enough to ease a few of Alan's fears, though he still wasn't thrilled with the thought of fighting an incarnation. Still, he supposed he could always open a gate to Elysia and hide inside the City of Light. The city's walls could defend the three of them against even a foreign incarnation, he was sure. The two servants stepped away, bowing. Alan stepped forward, flexing one hand and a fist to test the armor's fit. The suit was crafted so well that he barely felt any resistance.
"Is there anything you require before we leave, Eliadel?"
Grandmaster Naraka asked.
"No. Actually, yes. There is one thing."
Alan rummaged around on the stand next to his bed, looking for a trinket that he had left there for safekeeping. After a few seconds, he found it, glittering in the light from the hallway. It was an acorn, trapped inside a small golden birdcage. Alan willed Elysia's light into the acorn, which began throwing itself against the cage bars as though it had gone insane.
"We need Simon," Alan said.
"For what?" Grandmaster Naraka scoffed. "If we needed someone to swing a sword around, we'd be far better off with a squad from Tartarus. They, at least, could open a gate and travel us out if the need arose."
"I trust him, and I want him along," Alan said evenly. He wasn't sure why he insisted so strongly on having Simon around. Maybe he wanted to keep the Grandmasters off balance. But it was somehow comforting to know that, should things go wrong, Simon would be around to back him up.
Grandmaster Naraka stared at him for a while behind her red-stained glasses. She sighed.
"As you wish, Eliadel. But let's not wait until he responds to your call. We should at least go wake him up, since we do have a limited window of time."
Alan nodded, and the three of them walked down the hall toward Simon's room. Alan knocked first, though he didn't expect a response. Simon should be sleeping, if anything. Still, he raised his caged acorn alarm and gave it a shake. The finial was still buzzing, which meant that, wherever Simon's was, his acorn was shaking in harmony. Simon should have been awakened by the noise, if nothing else. One of Grandmaster Naraka's servants, trailing after her like white-dressed shadows, produced a key from a huge ring and handed it to Alan. Taking it into his hand, he unlocked the door and pushed it open. Not again, he thought. How often would he have to trudge through a battlefield, looking for any sign that Simon had survived? The room had been broken by battle. There were shallow slashes in the stone of several walls, as though Simon had swung that massive sword of his without regard for his surroundings. Even many of the floor tiles were sliced and cracked. One of the windows was open, one shattered. A thick, unnaturally dark blood had been splattered all over the bed and sprayed over the ground. Alan stepped into the room, carefully, in case the cracked floor tiles actually meant the floor might crash down into the rooms below, and searched for survivors, or bodies. He found a few tiny shreds of flesh that might have come from a wounded animal, though the whole room stank of so much metallic blood and musk that he would be tempted to believe one enormous beast was killed here. It only took him a few more seconds to dip into the nooks and crannies of the room, checking under the bed and in one of the closets. He even poked his head out of the broken window, checking the ground 4 floors down. "No bodies," Alan reported. The Grandmaster stayed in the doorway, her face a mask behind her scarlet glasses. Galad entered, gingerly poking at the walls and peering at the blood. Once he extended his hand, his right hand, which had been marked on the palm with a bright red symbol, and groped around in the air as though feeling some invisible object. "This was Naraka," Galad said. He sounded surprised. A dark suspicion bloomed in Alan's chest, and his head swiveled to confront Grandmaster Naraka. If she had attacked Simon while he stayed there, in the Grandmaster's palace, presumably under Alan's protection. Well, Alan wasn't sure what he would do, but he was angry enough that he might very well attack the Grandmaster, even if she was an ally. He and Simon had never been at all close, back in Myria, but Alan still counted him as a friend. Naraka slowly shook her head, keeping an eye on the room.
"I do not think he is dead," she said.
"Neither do I," Alan said. "He survived worse than this before. Only a few weeks ago, in fact."
"I have a reason for thinking so, child," the Grandmaster snapped. "If this was an attack from Naraka, it was likely in response to Simon's murder of several Naraka travelers, and his role in the death of Overlord Malachi. In such a case, the goal of the attack was just retribution."
"Just?" Alan exclaimed. "Tell me now, Naraka, were you involved in this?" Grandmaster Naraka glared at him.
"Will you listen to me for once? They would see it as just, whether or not I do. It is the Narakan way. But, if that is so, if this was a planned execution in retaliation for his violent actions, the attackers would have no reason to take his body away. Do you see? They would have simply killed him and left him here, perhaps marked in some way, as a notice that justice has been served."
Alan pondered that for a moment. "So the fact that he's not here means he probably retreated to his own territory. Safe, or at least recovering."
"And yet he's not responding to your call," Naraka pointed out.
It could mean he's simply too deep in the territory," Galad suggested. "Maybe he's in hiding and didn't take your alarm with him."
It was possible, even likely considering Simon. He was always the type to run off on his own without notifying or considering the people left behind.
"Time will not wait for us, Eliadel," Grandmaster Naraka said at last. "If he responds to your call before we leave the palace, we will take him with us. Otherwise, we have our mission."
Alan followed the Grandmaster out, considering her words. If she had spoken the truth about the Narakan assassins seeking justice, then it was most likely that Simon was under attack by Damascan travelers. Which made sense if they thought he was working on the side of Enosh. Then again, why attack Simon? Why not one of the Grandmasters, or Alan himself? If the Damascans had enough accurate intelligence to know where Simon's rooms were located, and when he was supposed to be in them, they had more than enough opportunity to strike at anyone they wished. Why Simon? The whole thing stank. And, while Grandmaster Naraka had carefully implied that the attackers must have been Damascan, she had never actually denied her involvement in the attacks. Also, why now? Alan found it hard to believe that Simon would vanish so suddenly, just before they embarked on a mission that Grandmaster Naraka thought was so critical that Alan himself should accompany her. She had insisted that he stay tucked away safe in the palace before, so why should this mission, seemingly so risky, be the one that she allowed him to undertake? There were too many lies, too many half-truths, and too much suspicion for Alan's taste. He preferred his conflicts simple and uncomplicated. Us or them. He would escort the Grandmaster on her attack. She had shown him nothing but dedication and loyalty. Besides, he couldn't let it be said that the Eliadel was a coward. But he would keep his eyes and ears open.
when he returned, he would demand some answers. Filled with the cold power of steel and nigh essence, Simon blurred forward. He felt his cloak pulling behind him, so that he looked like one of the nigh rushing over the grass. The Valenhall incarnation stood, calmly waiting for him. He didn't appear to have taken any sort of specific fighting stance. He stood there on the short hill, his gold and silver sword held casually in both hands. Simon stopped and pivoted at the last second, turning his momentum into a slash meant to take Valen in the side. The incarnation simply twisted his blade to the side and caught Azura's edge. Without a word, he turned Simon's strike and stepped forward, bringing his sword down on Simon's head. "Above you!" Angeline screamed. Simon had left her sitting on the grass nearby in order to have both hands free, but she still had more than enough of a vantage point to both see and sense the entirety of the battle. Between the doll's warning and the speed of the nigh essence, Simon had counted on having enough time to dodge Valen's first strike, stepping to the side and launching another attack of his own. But, even after watching Indiriel's battle earlier, Simon had never expected the incarnation to be so fast. By the time Simon heard and processed the doll's warning, Valen's blurring blade was only an inch from his neck. He hurled himself to the side, with so much strength that he overcompensated, almost leaping into the trees at the edge of the clearing. Simon twisted in the air and landed on his feet, skidding along the dew-wet grass. "He's coming," Angeline sent. Simon barely managed to get Azura up and in front of him before Valen followed him, seemingly flying forward, blade flashing. Azura rang like a cracked bell in Simon's hands as he somehow matched the incarnation's strike. Even the steel flowing through his blood seemed somehow strained to the breaking point, like a sword bent so far that it was about to shatter. Valen did not seem to pause, flowing gracefully from attack to attack as though practicing. Only desperation and panic blocked the second attack, and the next, and the next. Simon felt as though his arms would tear apart, and he couldn't seem to get enough breath. Sweat trickled down past his eyes, and some part of him knew that if his sweat blinded him for even an instant, he would die. "More strength," Angeline called. "You need to be stronger." "It's a little late for that," Simon sent, but he knew what she meant. He could call steel all at once instead of drawing it out as he normally did. He seemed to remember that he could do the same thing with nigh essence, too, though both powers would burn out even more quickly. The first time he had called all his steel in such a way had been back in Orcrith Cave, where he had done so to save Andra Agnos's life. After that incident, he had been able to call more steel than ever, and it seemed to last longer. But would it be enough now? More importantly, he wasn't sure he would survive the first second after burning his powers out. "You won't survive if you don't," Angeline pointed out. "Do it!" Simon managed to push back against Valen's sword, giving him enough of an opening to take a single step back. Without giving himself enough time to think too much about it, Simon drew deeply on the nigh essence. The world seemed to stop around him, grass blown back by a breeze made solid, stars hanging in the night sky, soldiers paused with their swords held above taut black chains. At the same time, Simon called a torrent of steel, which crashed through his body in an icy flood, pressing against the inside of his skin like a sack stuffed to bursting. All the while, the chains slid up his arms. He had never been as conscious of them as he was now, face to face with the chain-shrouded incarnation. Though the chains of Valenhall looked like living tattoos of black, crawling up his arms, they felt like real chains, cold and rough against his bare skin. He could only imagine what it must be like with steel wrapping tight around his entire body, being constantly draped in a heavy, pressing blanket of rigid metal. Simon righted his stance, balanced on the balls of his feet, and gathered both hands on Azura's hilt. He struck with all the strength and speed he could draw from his territory. Valen's eyes widened in surprise, but he still turned Simon's strike. Simon didn't let up, attacking again and again, the chains crawling faster than they ever had, wrapping his biceps and shoulders. The incarnation moved as swiftly as he had with Indiriel, speeding up to match Simon,
their crashing blades sending out spray after spray of bright sparks. While their blades rang together like the pounding of the surf, while he moved faster than anything in a human body had any right to do, Valen laughed.
"Not bad, little dragon," he said. "I'm glad to have you along."
His voice didn't sound warped, like most other sounds Simon heard through the Nye essence. Nor did he sound strained, as Simon himself felt. He sounded casual, even amused, as though they were playing his favorite game.
"Destroy Damasco with me," Valen said idly, blocking an overhand strike from Simon that would have sliced a boulder in half.
"What happens after?" Simon said, through gritted teeth.
He was putting all his power into attacks, and they were barely phasing the Valenhall incarnation. He didn't think he'd given the man a single scratch.
"After?"
Valen sounded confused, as though he'd never considered the concept.
"We would need to protect the innocent people," he said. "Test them. Make sure they're strong enough. If we use all 13 swords, we can spread out. Finally, the strong will not oppress the weak. Everyone will be strong."
"He means killing everyone, doesn't he?" Simon sent to Angeline, thrusting a Zura at Valen's chest.
"He means what he said," Angeline said sadly. "He doesn't see a difference between attacking someone and making sure they're ready for an attack. In his mind, he'll be doing the world a favor."
"So the power does drive you mad," Simon thought.
"Not mad," the doll responded. "Madness comes when a mind is broken. Incarnation does not break a man. It simply changes him. Never into anything pleasant."
No matter what Angeline or Valen said, that sounded like madness to Simon. He stepped forward in a combination attack that Kai had taught him, striking once, twice, three times in a single continuous motion. The first was supposed to force the opponent on the defensive, the second to throw his guard wide, and the third to strike home. It worked. Valen's Mithra was knocked aside enough for Simon's third attack to reach him. Simon surged forward with all his strength, Azura's tip resting against Valen's bare, chain-marked chest. A trickle of blood flowed down Valen's flat stomach as Azura pierced his skin. For a moment, Simon dared to hope. Then he realized that all his strength, everything he had drawn from Valenhall, was barely enough to scratch the incarnation's skin. Simon pressed harder, leaning on Azura with everything he could draw, trying desperately to call another scrap of liquid strength from his territory. But nothing came. Valen didn't seem bothered by his single wound, and he didn't bring Mithra in to take advantage of Simon's distraction. He leaned closer, a smile on his lips, his black and silver eyes amused.
"You've done well, boy. But you've barely seen the surface of what Valenhall has to offer."
The incarnation released his sword, letting it shimmer and vanish in midair. Barely had it vanished when it was replaced with a gleaming silver warhammer, wider than Valen's torso and standing taller than his head. Simon would have had to use two hands and all the steel he could call to even lift such a weapon, but Valen held it in his right hand. In his left appeared an enormous, double-headed axe. Valen's muscles flexed as he brought both weapons down, converging on Simon's position.
"Roll back!"
Simon followed the doll's instruction, tossing himself backwards and down the little hill. He had almost rolled back to his feet when the weapons hit the ground. The resulting shockwave knocked him onto his back. The ground quivered with the impact, the grass and soil, and perhaps even the stone underneath, shattering into a tiny chasm at Valen's feet. Valen released these weapons too, and instantly summoned another. This was a longbow, even taller than the hammer had been, its shaft made of some deep black wood, and its string of a metal that shone silver in the starlight. The incarnation pulled the string back, the wood flexing with an audible creaking, and a gleaming white arrow of solid light simply appeared on the string.
"You should dodge this," Valen suggested. He let the arrow fly.
Simon wasn't fast enough to dodge the arrow of light, not even close. But with a whispered warning from Angeline, he managed to throw himself into the tree line at the edge of their clearing. He fell into underbrush, branches and leaves scratching his skin as the arrow blazed overhead with a heavenly light. It struck a tree above Simon and burned straight through. When he stood and looked, he could see through the hole in that tree, and through the hole in the one behind that, and the tree behind that one, all the way to the edge of the woods. Worse, the world around him was back to normal speed. The soldiers once again clashed with Nye, although they seemed to have gotten even farther from Valen after his earth-shattering display with the hammer and axe. Simon still clung to the steel power by the edge of a fingernail. He barely had enough strength to keep holding Azura in both hands. But the Nye essence was gone. Valen had brought the silver string back to his cheek, another white arrow loaded in the bow. "Duck, Simon!" Valen called as he took aim. Then Indiriel's ragged sword burst from his chest. Kai stood before a beautiful woman, and all he could think about was how her flowing black dress looked like the wrapping on Azura's hilt. He had thought that holding the sword again, speaking one last time with his precious little ones, would have helped him to forget about them. That certainly hadn't worked. When he had been forced to hand Azura back to Simon, it had felt like cutting off one of his hands. "We'll be positioned outside the house, and we have a significant force waiting for incursion from Naraka," the Lady Adrienne was saying. Kai barely heard her. He was thinking of his dolls. "Master Kai, excuse me, can you hear me? Is there something wrong?" Adrienne sounded more annoyed than worried, almost like Otoku in one of her moods. The sound woke Kai from his stupor. Perhaps he had drifted too far away. "My apologies," Kai said. "I was lost in thought." "You were saying?" Adrienne glared, but she visibly calmed herself and gestured at the door behind Kai. It was a stone double door, chained shut, with a padlock of Tartarus steel. "You will be our last line of defense, Master Kai," Adrienne said. "If what I've heard about Valenhall is true, you should have no trouble taking care of whatever travelers made it past our initial troops and reach this point. Is there anything else you require?" Briefly, Kai wondered what the point was of making a lock out of Tartarus steel. It would be all but indestructible, certainly, but as a result it would be much easier to shatter the chain itself. Even the wall that anchored the chain would be simpler to break. "Nothing but warning, my lady," Kai said, after realizing that he had gone another few seconds without speaking. "Simply tell me when to stand guard, and I guarantee that none will pass me." Lady Adrienne let out a heavy breath and nodded, looking much reassured. "That is good to hear, Master Kai. We have prepared rooms for you, and I assure you that we will wake you in the event of an emergency. If you will—" Kai lifted a strand of Adrienne's hair from her shoulder and rubbed it in between two of his fingers. "You have lovely hair," he pointed out. "Have you ever considered donating it to someone in need? A doll maker, perhaps?" Very deliberately, Lady Adrienne looked from her hair to his face. "Remove your hand from me, Master Kai," she said. "I have heard that travelers are all but useless against you, but I am not far from simply seizing a sword myself and doing my best to run you through." Kai remembered himself again and withdrew his hand, standing with his spine straight as his master had insisted so many years ago. "I am sorry, my lady." Adrienne turned to walk away. "As long as this chamber is not breached, we have nothing to discuss,"